the buzzer. McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome. It's the world's greatest podcast, a.k.a. Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. We just completed the first weekend, and it was a great weekend of college basketball. Actually, the first week over Thanksgiving. Seth, what you got? You got something good here.
Well, here's the thing, Dan. You know, so we've played, think about this. All right, we've had one basically weekend of hoop. All right, and I get this text message from a friend of mine who's a high-level Division I, top 20-level program. All right, like tradition-rich program. And this is what I get. It's unbelievable. After one or two games, we visited with three guys we didn't get last year. A representative from all three have texted us already about transferring. They are unhappy. And our one freshman's dad complained as well. Spring open transfer season will be an absolute blinking zoo. Now, here's my thing. And I want to get into it because we had some good basketball this weekend. So we're in a pandemic. Players have been in quarantine. They've had limited practice. They've had all the things that are going on in college basketball. And one weekend, some teams have played three games. And here's a guy that says not only has he been contacted by three representatives of guys he recruited and didn't get that are ready to leave already, but that one of his own parents basically is driving him crazy and questioning everything he's done. One weekend. Can we at least get to Christmas break?
No. No, it's all about the player's happiness, baby. It's not about the sport. It's not about the institution. It's not about any of that. All I ever read, it's all about the player's happiness. So this is what you get. Because, Seth, players are never going to be happy. Isaiah Livers, who's done nothing in his career but be on the court, screaming at Juwan Howard, screaming at a guy who basically brought Michigan basketball into the modern world, won championships, played in the NBA, recruited him. But now guess what? Isaiah Livers screaming at his – and you know what? Nobody will criticize it because these poor little players are exploited. They're exploited, Seth. Oh, the life of a college basketball player is so terrible. Oh, my God. Give them more rights. Give them money. Give them everything. No. 18 to 22-year-olds need direction. Juwan Howard was trying to give direction. Guess what? The players start screaming at 18 to 22-year-olds got to work for stuff. And the coach that texts you, guys don't want to work. They want to find the easy way out. But you know what, Seth? This is college basketball. This is what everybody on our televisions want us to say and want us to do, have this kind of stupidity around our sport. Sorry, I took over your topic.
No, that's good. My other rant before we get into the weekend is, and you and I are going to disagree on this one as well. I understand coaches wearing masks. I mean, everyone's testing, everyone's in a bubble environment, everyone's in a safe environment, like the thing in Connecticut. But here's the deal. If you're going to wear a mask, wear the stinking mask. It's not a chin strap. Like if you're doing it for optics, but it spends all the whole game around your neck. Come on, man. If you're going to take it down every time you talk to your team, what's the sense? You're spitting all over them anyway. All right. So like, here's the deal. Either wear a mask or don't wear a mask. But it's not a chin strap. It's not an ornament. It's not like something on your lapel. So like, you know, now Chris Mooney, he was pretty creative. He had the clear mask. So people say, why are you wearing a clear mask? He was wearing a clear mask so that the players could actually almost read his lips, which I thought was a pretty novel and unique idea. That's from a Princeton grad. So you would think a Princeton grad would, you know, be a little bit, you know, ahead of the curve, which I thought was a good idea. Some guys wear the gaiters. I don't care where people are politically or whatever. I think coaches are trying to, and leagues. I mean, the NFL, they fine you if you don't wear it the right way. The SEC, they fine you if they don't wear it the right way in terms of, I think, football. So I just think it's silly that, you know, if you're going to wear it, then damn, wear the thing until we get through this thing.
Why would we disagree?
Say you don't have to wear it. Like I talked to Kevin Willard last night. He said, we're all being tested. We're all in bubble environments now. You know, what's the sense of wearing them? You know, and I, you know, again, I respect Kevin. So, I mean, you know, that, and I understand where he's coming from. I mean, guys get tested. I mean, the Big Ten are getting tested every single day. Every single day. So
why do you think I disagree with that?
Would say?
You said to me, you'll disagree with this too. Why would I disagree with that?
Oh, I don't know. I just thought you might. I didn't know.
No, I look, I'm a big fan of masks. I'm a big fan of doing what the hell they tell me to do. I think it'd be hard. I will disagree with, can I disagree with you about something you put on Twitter last night?
Certainly.
You're defending Calipari last night. They get beat by Richmond. Yeah, you were. And you're saying, well, nobody has scrimmages, blah, blah, blah. Hey, man, they got the highest recruiting class, the most NBA players, the highest trend. You guys all told me Olivia Saar is
that's in the past.
Huh?
They put a team on the floor that's never played a game together. They've never played a game. There wasn't one player that played that game.
Neither had Richmond.
Well, they didn't put one player on the court in that game that's ever played a game for Kentucky. The Richmond guys have played 4,008.
But that wasn't your point.
Fifth-year seniors.
That wasn't your point.
A team that won 25 games last year.
Your point, that wasn't your point. Your point was they didn't have exhibitions, they didn't have scrimmages.
Yeah, when you're putting five guys on the court that never played together, and you don't have an exhibition and a scrimmage and dress rehearsals and basically something the way you can learn about your team, like, no, that's not playing hard enough. No,
what are you? Whoa. So they don't practice?
Yeah, they practice. They don't have referees. You need to play against someone else.
They don't have referees brought in practice. They don't have ref. They don't scrimmage against each other. They don't. That's not the coach.
Officials weren't really allowed to be brought in. Real officials.
That's on the coach.
No,
I mean, if you don't know your team,
on the protocol.
Huh? No, you're not listening to me. You're still on the official. If you haven't scrimmaged with your team, if you haven't made them comfortable going up and down in a game type environment, then that's on you as a coach. You're no excuse. You got the most NBA players. All you guys are telling me how great Olivia Saar is. I remember what I told you about Olivia Saar. All right. This is the greatest program in the history of college basketball with a Hall of Fame coach, NBA players, and they haven't been on the court together. Okay. All right. Okay. You're right. They haven't been. But generally, if both teams haven't been on the court, the one with the best coach and the best NBA players usually is going to win. All I'm saying. I'm not
so
mad.
A team that won 25 games with ridiculous experience that was an NCAA team played against a bunch of skinny 18-year-old guys that are still learning how to compete hard.
Wait a second. When I see the recruiting things, they're not skinny 18-year-olds. This guy's a first-round draft. This guy's a lottery pick. DJ Boston's greatest player in the history of wherever the hell DJ Boston's from. But now they lose. Oh, they're just at home. No. See? No. Uh-uh.
No. Here's the deal.
No.
The NBA draft is all futures market anyway.
No. No. Okay. But the rankings of high school recruits and how we sit there going, this guy's great wing. He's best wing in class. No, look.
Most overused word is great in evaluating players.
I agree. You know, everybody can play in college basketball.
Exactly.
And yeah. Kentucky has no business ever losing to Richmond at home. It happened.
That's where I disagree. I think Richmond, this point of the season, is better than Kentucky. It's not even close.
Richmond understands
what it takes to win. The Kentucky guys right now, they don't understand what a good shot is and what a bad shot is. They don't understand playing hard and not playing hard. They don't understand, like, I said it halftime. And I know you agree with this, Dan Dock. I said at halftime, Kentucky was up. They were kind of bumping cutters a little bit, took them out a little bit of rhythm, ran them up 3-point line. I said, anyone can do something once. Good teams do it every single time. Let's see if they can do it in the second half. I said, because I just had a feeling they weren't mature enough, tough enough to maintain a discipline to guard and do the right things in the second half. Sure enough, boom. That's inexperience. That's youth. They'll learn how to do that. We all know, you know,
sure.
Cal's running the same stuff for this team that he ran at the end of the season for last year's team. This team's different.
And
he'll have different stuff in. But
right I get now, what you're saying.
Too young, too inexperienced, don't know how to play hard, are selfish, take bad shots, not very good passing team, and they don't have a point guard right now.
All right. I get all that. But I'm just going to tell you, we all go by our life's experiences. In 17 years, 16 of them when Indiana was a pretty good program at Indiana, taught me you never lose to Richmond when you're at a Kentucky or you're at an Indiana. I thought it was a great weekend of hoops. I got to give credit to a couple of teams that no, you and I have not talked about. Can I talk about Clemson for just a second?
Ooh, Amir Sims.
Yes, and Amir Sims has been good for a couple of years. They got two big-time let me put it to you this way. They got wins against big-time coaches. They beat Mississippi State with Ben Holland, and they beat Purdue with Matt Painter. They beat two, and in Purdue, they beat a hell of a culture, right? And in Mississippi State, they beat a Final Four team. You got to give them a little credit, and I don't think anybody's talking about it.
You know what? I agree with you. And the kid they got from Fordham who transferred, the honor kid, gives him a guard that kind of beat you off the bounce a little bit. You got Newman, but Amir said Brad Brownell is a terrific coach.
He is.
And after he won that Purdue game, I text back and forth with him, and he said, "We're just playing harder than other people." He said, and I said, "Well, there's a little more to it. I mean, you move Amir Sims, they run real motion, and yeah. They move Amir Sims all over the court to get people to chase him, not just put him in ball screens, but, you know, put him in different spots on the floor, bring him off pin downs, have him flash, have him reverse the ball, chase it, pop. But Brad seems they always play hard. I mean, they always guard you. I mean, yeah. Last year their defensive numbers were terrific. They just, you know, they got, like he said, look, we got to make shots. Make shots, we look pretty good. We're going to guard you. We're going to make it hard to score against us. They've got some experienced players, the Dawes kid, the Trapp kid, the Newman kid. They're going to guard, and they have, I think, in most games, one of the two best players on the court, no matter who they play against, in Sims, and one of the most versatile players on the court. I agree with you 100%.
Hey, Memphis.
All right, you were there. Give me the scoop. I was thoroughly disappointed in him.
You know what? They broke down. Now, I wanted to talk to you about this kind of from a philosophy standpoint. They open up the tournament that I was at, and Boogie Ellis comes in, electrifies the place. You know, there's nobody there, but he electrified a non-existent crowd. Let's put it that way. And then they got AAU-ish, Seth. And by that, I mean this. They came out, and the next night against Western Kentucky, Boogie Ellis wasn't passing. You know what I mean? And he also wasn't making. And Rick Stansberry in Western Kentucky with the Bassey kid, this big, strong kid named Williams, and a guard that's going to have about 2,000 points in Hollingsworth. You don't play around
good. With him.
He's good. Seth, I think Memphis guards, but they have a fake right now connection. Does that, you know, when it broke down, it broke down, period. And it broke down the second half against Western Kentucky, and then they got whooped by VCU. I didn't like him. I liked him early. Then I didn't like him by the end, Seth.
I don't think they have point guard, number one. I mean, I don't think anyone like – here's the thing. I don't think they have a point guard. I know this is an overused term. They have no identity offense. So I don't know what they're trying to do offensively.
Right.
I mean, I'm watching them play. I'm saying, all right, what are they? I think Quinones is a volume shooter. I think Boogie Ellis thinks he's a volume shooter. I think Nolly thinks he's a volume shooter. You don't have a point guard. The big kids, he say he can block shots, but he's not ready offensively. Jeffries should be the guy.
Bad tournament.
But he had a really, really bad tournament.
Yeah.
So you've got Jeffries should be the guy. Nolly thinks he's the guy. Ellis wants the ball in his hand. He came back and wants to show how people, how good he is. They've got no identity, and they got no point guard. And that is a disaster. And like I told you before that, I don't know how much you guys probably didn't get a chance to spend any time with Penny because you guys were upstairs and the players were down.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy is a basketball guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even it's funny. Everyone talks about communication. Last year when I did their UConn game, I'm not sure. You can only coach people that want to be coached. So you got to get some guys that are going to be in your locker room. So that's Penny freaking Hardaway. All right. And we need to just lock in and hang on his every word. And, you know, I think that's going to be an interesting environment to watch. And another team from that league, to me, I thought looked terrific, was Houston last night.
Yeah.
I thought their guard play, the number of guards they have, you know, whether it's Grimes, whether it's Mills, whether it's Jarreau, whether it's Sasser. I mean, they got four guards that are tough, aggressive, attacking. And the trade by Mackin was impressive. They're undersized. They rebound. They had Fabian White, let me tell you something, who blew out his ACL before the season. They would be really, really dangerous. But I was impressed with them. I wasn't as impressed with Texas Tech.
No.
I mean, like, I'm not, and I'll be interested to see what happens. I'm not going to if Chris Beard can get Mac McClung to be a winning player, then that's the all-time greatest coaching job. I do like Peavy. I think Micah Peavy is going to be really good. I like Terrence Shannon. I think, look, he's going to get him to play hard. And you need to elaborate on this because people don't understand it. They run real motion. He's got a whole new team. All right. Explain to people how hard it is to teach motion and the process and the time it takes for a team to really be able to run it instead of just screening air, cutting to spots, not sprinting to screens, not reading situations, not reading the floor. Explain that.
I'll break it down in a nutshell. It goes against everything that players are doing now. It's movement without the ball, not with the ball. It's not screening the ball. It's reading the defense. It's not looking at the ball when you're off the ball. It's looking at the man. It's getting shoulder to shoulder on a screen and reading the man, not looking at the ball. And those are all things that are hard. The other thing is maybe the hardest. I always said this as a player and as a coach. The hardest thing to play in motion is the guy with the basketball. I've got the basketball. I've got to read the defense. The guy may curl. The guy may pop. I may have to hit the screener. All the time, I got a guy hanging on me as I'm dribbling towards the action. It is very, very difficult. You know, I don't exactly know because not everybody's public with when they shut down their program or when they I don't know how much practice Texas Tech has had. But Purdue, we used to call it the metamorphosis of Purdue about Christmas time when Gene Katie and even Matt were there. All of us, they might lose a game early to somebody. I remember with Big Dog, they went to like James Madison and lost. And then by the end of the year, no one's beating them. They get to the Elite Eight. I think it was that year. Seth, it just takes a monumental amount of time. And frankly, it's the reason people don't want to do it. You know, there's too many moving parts. It's not scripted. I've got to bring the basketball to the action if I'm the guard. I got to read the cutter. Is he curling? Is he popping back? Do I hit the screener? And all the time, a big guy's hanging on me. It's just, you have to be, if you're going to run it, committed. And you've got to break it down every day, one-on-one screening, two-on-two, three-on-three, four-on-four, five-on-five, two-on-nobody, three-on-nobody, five-man versus nothing. I mean, it's just and for Chris Beard, frankly, he's like Purdue was with Gene Katie. They would be terrible early. They would lose. Even with Big Dog, they went to James Madison, I think, and lost. All of a sudden, at Christmas time, when they've had like three practices a day, boom, you can't beat them in the second half of the year. So I give Chris Beard some time with that, and I give him credit for doing the same thing with Matt Painter. You know, they're going to go four round one with some big guys, but it is
– big guy. That guy's the largest human being I've ever seen. Big. Seriously, Painter. All right, so he had, you know, he had harms.
Yeah.
He had, he dies. Haas. I mean, like, he's had 21, almost 22 feet of post guy over the last 6 years.
Some guys, hey, Seth, some guys look like their school. The big old 7'5" guy looks like Purdue. Boiler up, hammer down.
All right. So, speaking of boiler up, hammer down, and speaking of motion, Virginia. All right. Now, like, USF loses to UMass Lowell.
Yeah. Who's right. Not bad.
No, who's good. Very well coached.
Yeah.
Patrick had very good coach. and then beats Virginia. Now, here's my take on Virginia. And we said this in our previews. No Braxton Keyes rebounding. No Mamadidi Kite's versatility defensively. That's number one. So it changes their DNA defensively. Changes their ball screen coverages. It changes someone that can make up for mistakes. That's number one. Number two, they're running this five-out read-react offense with an open post because everyone's got to be positionless. And one, in that movement, their floor balance isn't good. They're actually getting beat in transition for wide-open threes. Never happens with Virginia. Two, at the end of shot clocks, the ball's in the wrong person's hand. And like Kihei Clark, I'm just sorry. End of a game, end of a shot clock, the ball can't be in Kihei Clark's hands. He can't get to the basket and score over anyone. They've got to figure out another way to do that. But that five open, as opposed to mover blocker or the ball screen continuity, they get nothing at the rim. They get nothing in a post-up. They get nothing in a pocket pass like they would move a blocker or a hard curl and you get draw two and you make the quick pocket pass. I'm interested to see how Tony Bennett's a very smart man, but how long he stays with that. And I was surprised he went to it.
Seth, I'm not sure. You think about their team, all right, that's been winning, you know, won a championship. Kyle Guy, NBA. Jerome, NBA. Hunter, fourth pick in the draft. Diakite, I don't know where he is, but I guarantee he's playing somewhere, and I'm sure I'm missing. You know what I was shocked at? They're not real skilled. You know what I mean? I mean, like, they're
– Hauser is.
What's that?
Hauser is.
Yeah, Hauser is. But, good. Like, Kihei Clark's made some shots late in the game. I you know what I was disappointed in, and this is not right. This isn't – I'm sure I'm wrong about this. Like, Jay Huff. Like, Jay Huff came on last year. As soon as I had that game on, I looked at Jay Huff, and he had the same body. Is that – you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. In college basketball, the weight program and everything is so – like, I thought the guy's an NBA player because he can shoot it. He's long. I don't know. I'm not saying he's an NBA. He's not Anthony Davis, but I'm just saying.
The Plumleys are playing in the NBA.
What's that?
The Plumleys are playing in the NBA. Jay Huff should be an NBA player.
Yeah, and I watch him. I'm like, but I'm not. I'll give Tony Bennett the same credit or the same leeway that we just gave Chris Beard. You know, it takes a minute. And when you doubt Virginia, you're being foolish because he's going to win a ton of games and he's going to be around the top of that league. So read and react, blocker, mover, whatever he chooses to go to. I'm going to give him, you know, because he's earned it. I mean, what the hell? The guy's one of the great coaches in college basketball. So I think that he's. You know, I'm gonna let that go for a minute.
They've got to figure out how they're gonna defend. They got to figure out like their floor. That was the worst floor balance I've ever seen them have.
Seth, I've never seen them give up shots in three in transition like that.
Yeah. All right, going from that, let's go to the other side. Gonzaga, at a different level. Drew Timmy, footwork, toughness, playing through contact, elbow, low block. Passing. Kispert, threes, middle game, rim, rebounding. I mean, he just, whatever he has to do, defends, rebounds, makes open shots, can push it, secondary ball handler. But Jalen sucks. You know, like I watched a lot of tape on Cade Cunningham. I said, wow, Cade Cunningham's really good, and we'll get to him next. Jalen Suggs is a different cat. Like Jalen Suggs looked to me like you could throw him in an NBA game right now and he'd be able to defend and run offense and help you win. What was your take?
Seth, we only have so many like really, really good teams and Kansas is supposed to be one, right? And Marcus Garrett's supposed to be the defensive player of the year. And Jalen Suggs did whatever he wanted, Seth. Like, whatever he wanted. You know what it reminded me of? And this is going to age me. It reminded me when I was a kid and the first time I saw Magic Johnson be pushed at point guard his freshman year at Michigan State. And I'm like, whoa. Like, look at this. I don't know why it reminded me. I just did. It was different. It was like, he's on a plane, Seth. I don't know who's, you know, Cade Cunningham. I don't care about all that stuff. I just care that what I saw to that kid on that team against that other team, Kansas, a historical program, was as good as I've seen in a long, long time of a kid. You know, Zion Williamson was explosive and we all went, wow, but this kid's a baller, man. Big time. Do you think that Gonzaga will go undefeated going into the tournament, however many games they play?
I mean, again, we have a small snapshot. They dropped 102 on Kansas like it was nothing.
I know.
I mean, like it was nothing. And I'll tell you, the other thing is they play ridiculously fast, yet they're ridiculously efficient. Like they flow from break into offense, and the balls go bop, 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 and guys are cutting and they're spacing. There's no reset. And there's no, I mean, they just, their flow from transition, which is explosive. It's like almost Michigan State explosive to getting into what they want to do conceptually is ridiculous. And then the number of guys that they have that can make a shot, make a play, know how to play, fiercely competitive, play to their strengths. Like the kid, what is it, Anton Watson? Runs the floor, rebounds, you know, just does what he has to do. I mean, they've just got, and then we didn't, you know, Andrew Nebhard, the kid who transferred from Florida, who's eligible because everyone gets eligible. He's going to have the biggest adjustment because he's used to having the ball stuck in his hands. And that's kind of one of the reasons I think he left, is that Mike didn't want the ball stuck in his hands as much. Now he's in a situation where he's just one of the dudes. I mean, that thing ain't rotating around him. He's got to be looking at Suggs and going, ooh, that's what a number of choice looks like. So, I mean, they're so well coached. They play so hard. Timmy is phenomenal, just phenomenal. His footwork, his quickness, his ability to play off each shoulder. I mean, knock down threes. I mean, he was really good.
This is why
the Big Ten by far.
Hold on. This is why I like, this is why I love college basketball. Think about this. Of all the big cities, of all the states that have all these programs, the best team in the country is a little Catholic school up in the Northwest. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, I understand they're a big time program and all. I get it. But no other sport is doing that. I'm sorry. No other sport is doing what college basketball does. Go ahead. What were you going next? Can I give a shout out?
Who is really interesting? The Big Ten, just top to bottom, is ridiculous. I mean, even Geo Baker goes out and Rutgers still looks good. I mean, the kid Jacob Young for Rutgers looked very good. Ron Harper Jr. has looked phenomenal. They play hard. They rebound. They're tough. But I watched Michigan State fairly closely against Notre Dame. And they are going to be really good defensively. And the thing that impressed me about Michigan State, play big, play small, Hauser rebounded the ball. Rocket's coming off this knee bruise. He started to get a little bit of a flow, which I thought was good. One of the great stories in college basketball, there's two to me great stories. Josh Langford coming back is one of the great stories. And Patrick McCaffrey is one of the great stories. But let's stay with Josh Langford. He moved well, makes shots. He brings tremendous leadership. Tom can play big. He can play small. I mean, I'm watching them and I'm saying, if this is where they are now, how much better can they get? Because I think they have incredible room for growth. I was really impressed with them.
I sent you a text, Bingham, wow. Marcus Bingham came in and looked just
bigger.
Phenomenal. And this is not like they made Notre Dame look like a lower level team. They really did, Seth. I wonder about their point guard. You know, when Tom has won, he's had a dynamic point guard. His best team, he's always won, but his best teams, you know, and he had one for last, obviously, few years in Cassius Winston. Lawyer, I really like. I think he's been kind of
10 minutes a game guy.
What's that?
He's a 10 minute a game guy.
I'll go 10 minutes a half.
Yeah, I'm not. Rocket Watts has got to be their point guard.
He's got to be, but is he? You know, I mean, you can like it's like when your assistants would say, "Well, he's not a great shooter, but he makes shots." I'm like, no, I want a great shooter, or you know, he can play the point, but he's not really a point guard. You know, again, I think Michigan State was fantastic. And I love when I see a kid like Bingham who's skinny and you can see him, but he's got enthusiasm. And next thing you know, we're like, whoa. And a Hauser's really good. And Rocket Watts is really good. Aaron Henry has elevated his game. But Josh Langford, great story. I pray, and I don't pray much for people that, you know, aren't immediate family. I pray for you. But
thank you. I need it.
You got it. But I really want that kid to have a good 12th year. I do. I want him to, you know, hey, Garza hasn't missed yet for Iowa.
That was Garzilla.
He hasn't missed. Indiana plays, you know, in the Asheville deal, so we'll see.
Big game today, Providence, Indiana today.
Yeah, media here has already said this is Archie's best team, and they're the deepest team in Indiana since 93 with Calbert Chaney and Damon. The media here is completely out of their minds. Wisconsin, we'll see. Michigan, we talked about. I thought Minnesota looked all right in stretches against a fast Marymount team, athletic. You know,
Marcus Carr looked as good as anyone. Marcus Carr is
really good.
Two games that I mean, you talk about a guy that can get the ball anywhere. Like I look at Minnesota, and again, you know the league better than I do. I look at Carr, I look at Kalischer, I look at Booth Gotch, the kid transferred from Utah who can score it also. You got three guys right there that are pretty good. The Robbins kid, the big 7-footer.
I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was pretty good.
I mean, they looked really, you know, quite honestly, interesting. Illinois blows the first two games out. You sent me a text message. Like you just said, the end of the game, Io DeSumo, game over. By the way, Jason Preston, the kid from Ohio University, woo! That dude is good. I mean, like he needs to get, I mean, like that, he looked like an NBA potential point guard at 6'4". I said he has a PhD in ball screens. The decisions he made off of those ball screen reads, and their team made, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Their spacing, terrific. But Illinois, and I thought it was good that they faced some adversity. We actually had Brad Underwood on our show after the game, College Basketball Live scoreboard. And he thought it was good. He said he learned something about himself because, you know, it was a close game and he tightened his bench a little bit, but he loves Curbelo. He loves Miller. They're good. They're good. I mean, like, they're good. But explain what makes DeSumo so good.
You know, it's interesting, Seth. He goes a lot of stretches and he doesn't do a whole lot. But when you look at a guy as a basketball player, say, all right, he's long, he's athletic, so the whole body and athletic ability fits. But you know what, Seth? He's not pigeonholed as a shooter. He's not pigeonholed as a driver. You know, he's a good finisher, really. No, great finisher, actually. And when I talk about finisher, I'm not talking about layups over and around. I'm talking about, you know, I used to call them little pop shots where you got to pop it over a guy, a little banker from the wing where a big's coming at you, but you stop outside the lane and lob it over a big guy coming. But the thing that's the best about him, Seth, and I learned this the hard way, saying this isn't going to end well, back in a couple of years ago when he beat Michigan State, he is ice cold, Seth. When I don't care what anybody tells me, I'll take Io DeSumo with the ball, end of the game, down one, make or miss to win, and you saw it against Ohio U. He just has an inner confidence about him. And I think that comes from how hard he works, Seth. I think a lot of times guys have fake confidence. This kid's put in so much work at being a basketball player. And I'll tell you something else. He's a smart kid. He understood the value of coming back, even though everybody and their mother was telling him to go to the NBA. He's got a great role in the world, or in the world of college basketball. He is. I don't care. People can hit me with whomever. He's the number one closer in the sport, in my opinion, because he's earned it over the last few years. He just has an inner confidence, Seth. He just does.
He's impressive to me. I thought overall they were, Adam Miller looked really good. He shot it comfortably. Curbelo looked like he had toughness. And I'm not sure if I told the story last week. You know, I was talking to Brad a week ago, and he was talking about Ohio. And he basically said there was a loose ball in practice and a couple of freshmen didn't dive after it. I dove after it, pitched it ahead. They got a layup. And he got up and he turned to the freshman and said, "You want to play at Illinois, you better dive on that ball."
Yeah.
He goes, because that dude right there ain't putting you in the game unless he knows you're going to dive on that ball. And to me, we always say players coach team. We always say who's coaching your locker room. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. And that means, you know, I'm disappointed. Like, look, I saw Ohio live last year. I thought they were good. And I thought Preston had a great deal. But I was a little – if I was Brad Underwood, I'd got a lot of ammunition on my team about playing against good teams, maybe being overconfident, being immature. I don't know. Seth, I got to talk about West Virginia real quick. They won the tournament I was in, and I am in love with Derek Culver. Plays hard, man. Derek Culver, woo! I think he's going to lead the country in double-doubles. I think he just, you know, he went up against some pretty good bigs. You know, he really did, and I thought he was terrific. He got in a little foul trouble against Basie, who I think is a first-round pick, maybe a lottery pick, big kid from Western Kentucky. But Derek Culver may never play in the NBA. I don't know. I just know that he plays hard as hell, and Hug's got to be glad he's on his team.
McBride, Taj Sherman, two most important guys because those are the two guys that can make enough shots, or maybe McNeil. Don't you think they've got to have someone, if they can have just make enough shots to open up the floor so they can play that high-level basketball?
Seth.
Enough guard play to get something easy in transition. If those guys do something. And then I was disappointed in Shibue. I thought he was just so stiff. He wasn't elastic. He wasn't engaged, maybe.
Seth, remember when you're a kid and you're in like sixth grade and the big old fat kid just kind of is bigger than everybody, stands under the bucket, gets it. And, you know, everybody's jumping at him trying to, that's kind of what he was. I was disappointed in him. I think he'll get better when he learns his best jump. But let me go back to your point about making shots, man. They came down in the semifinal against VCU. The game was going. You know, it was 2-4, whatever. And then all of a sudden, on the right wing, whap, McNeil hits one. And I swear to God, in an empty gym, and you'll understand this, coaching, like the whole West Virginia side gave a like something was easy. You know what I mean? So that's big for them. Hey, I got to give a shout out, Seth. We're going to be talking about the Phoenix of Elon. They're 2-0 because Junior is there. Hunter McIntosh, 3 seconds to go, down one to Tubby Smith's high point. Steps to the line. Whap, whap, boom. Elon, the Fighting Mike Trogies. The Phoenix. We are all Phoenix, Seth. 2-0.
I'll tell you what. And, you know, and by the way, that staff is the coach's son's staff because Butchie Pierre's son, I got a call from my man Butchie Pierre, who I called the Urban Cowboy, who was an assistant coach to John Brady in all those years. The Urban Cowboy's son is also a member of the Elon staff. Now I'll get back to the Big 12. Mark Vidal is my favorite player in college basketball.
Why?
Because you never have to run a play for him. And he don't care if you run a play for him. He's just going to guard basically all five guys at once. He's going to grab every missed shot. And he's going to get, you know, 10 points and 15 rebounds. I mean, Baylor beating a Washington team. Now, obviously, they lose two first-round draft choices, but a Washington quad, A. Green and the Bay Kid and Naz Carter. And they just demoralized those dudes. I mean, that was their first game. But again, they had all those guys coming back.
Why are some teams exempt from the first game? Why are they exempt?
Why is who exempt? They quarantined Baylor.
But they played pretty good.
And here's my philosophy. Why'd they play pretty good? Jared Butler's a junior. Macy Oteague's a fifth-year guy. Mark Vidal's a senior. Like wait a second. You know what? You kill me because you even said veteran teams that have guys returning in a quarantine, experience matters. Those guys will navigate the pandemic better than most. Yes or no?
Yes, but Kentucky should never lose to Richmond at home. Hey, I think you said I may not be invited to the fantasy camp. I'm sad about that.
I'll work on it. Couple other leagues. A-10 with a pretty good first week.
I like Rhode Island, Seth.
St. Louis, pretty good. Rhode Island, pretty good.
my lock of the day yesterday was Rhode Island destroying San Francisco. No way San Francisco was coming back and playing after that win. And you know what? When I watched Rhode Island, I cannot name one player on their team. I know you can, but you know what I saw? I saw a real toughness. And by the way, congratulations, Tom Penders, former coach of Rhode Island, into the College Basketball Hall of Fame. I think that's great for Coach Penders.
You know what?
You still got an answering machine? Do you still have an answering machine in your house?
Yeah, I do. Come on now.
Is that an answering machine?
My first boss was Tom Penders. Gave me my first job.
Hey, this is Seth. Leave me a message. Did he really wear
it? No, first of all, the message on my answering machine is my wife. Sorry, we can't come to the phone right now. I mean.
Oh, my God. I haven't had a home phone in 10 years.
It's another thing I'm paying for I don't need. and speaking of that, the 8-10 across the board is good. I think I watched St. Louis play the other day.
Oh.
And Jordan Goodwin is good. I mean, he's really good. But Javonte Perkins is a bad man.
Pro?
Yes, a human bucket. 6'6", just scores. And St. Louis and Cam Thomas of LSU was good. And Watford was good. Smart was okay. Javonte Perkins and Hassan French, the 6'7" forward for St. Louis, didn't even play. All right? I am telling you, St. Louis is good. The 8-10, I had this conversation with Sean Kearney, he's the associate commissioner of that league. They want to know what, you know, we're not a mid-major league. I said, stop, enough.
Don't even worry about it.
Who cares what people call you? It's go win games. Dayton, VCU, Rhode Island, St. Louis, St. Bonaventure. I mean, like, Richmond. I mean, the league is good. Don't worry about what people call you. Let your wins define your league. I think too many times guys get so caught up in semantics. Let the wins define your league. Let us talk about the teams as opposed to you talking about, you know, some stupid, you know, definition of your team. Am I right or wrong?
No, I totally agree, Seth. I mean, we're talking about a team. I saw VCU play. They're young. And they got young bodies, you know what I mean? Like skin.
Can be VCU to have young bodies, but not Kentucky.
Well, yeah, Kentucky's a little different than VCU. I mean, what's wrong with you? Well, let me put it to you this way. VCU won two games on the road, beat the hell out of Memphis. So, yeah, Kentucky. All right. Hey, look, is that the new normal? Because, you know, Kentucky should lose to Richmond at home. All right, I'm in on it. Maybe I just have higher standards for Kentucky than everybody else. Anyway.
You could because you played at Indiana, and you know the standards at Indiana are such.
That's what I'm trying to say. But, hey, VCU played one bad half. They played one bad half, really, and got wore out, really, by you know, West Virginia. But I tell you this, if you're scheduling in a normal year where you're not trying to find games, you're trying to find wins, you don't want to play VCU. Those dudes play hard, Seth. And Mike Rhodes, they put on an 18-0 streak in their opener that looked exactly like, what was it? What was Shaka's thing? Chaos or the hell was it? I don't think it was Chaos.
No, it's
I don't know. But whatever the hell.
They're back to their identity.
That's what they were, at least in that. But, hey, look, if I'm the commissioner, assistant commissioner of the Atlantic 10, you know what I'm saying? I'm saying I don't give a damn what you call us. Just call us winners. Because you won at Kentucky, you beat Memphis. As you said, St. Louis looks terrific. And we haven't even really seen Dayton yet. So, you know.
I'm going to throw one last thing at you, and then I'm going to finish one thing. Nova. All right? Virginia Tech. When that game was scheduled, I said I thought Nova was in trouble. I thought Nova, coming off obviously a good win. They're still developing who they are. I mean, like, you know, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who Jay Wright told me the other day. And by the way, Jay Wright, how about him? They go to play two games in the bubble. Now they're going to play their fourth. And talking to Jay the other day, he said, look, I know we're going to play the games. We're in a safe environment. I said, you know, we're getting tested all the time. We know the game's going to go on. It sounds crazy. So when he told me that, I said, good, I'll play winners. I'll put together a team, I'll play winners. But, I mean, Nova, they lose the game. Virginia Tech hard to play against, run really good offense. They play hard defensively. I mean, they are an alert defensive team. Alume, the kid who came with him from Watford, I think is going to help them some. They got a bunch of shot makers. They're tough, Virginia Tech. Any concern about Nova?
This isn't gonna, I don't think, impact them because I think they're good enough. But I, you know what? I'm watching them and I'm watching Colin Gillespie try to create as a post player. You know what I'm talking about? Like they would put him on the right
block. Series.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm wondering, okay, who's going to go get a bucket for him? I know. Look, last undefeated 1976. You know what I mean?
What school is that?
And I want to talk about that. That was Indiana. And all of a sudden now, Indiana 1976 team going into the College Basketball Hall of Fame. They should have been in the College Basketball Hall of Fame 30 years ago. And by the way, congratulations, my friend Jimmy Jackson going in as well. No, I don't think so, Seth. I mean, they got beat by an ACC team. A team that they're still living off your culture at Virginia Tech. They're still the toughness, the intensity. No, seriously. I mean, that's a program that's, you know, you get beat. Hey, I think it'd be hard to stay in a bubble that long. I think it'd be hard.
That's exactly. Jay said after 3 days it was hard.
Yeah. I've always said this, man. If you had to spend 2 weeks in a hotel, I don't care how good the hotel, drive you crazy a little bit. So, nah, I'm not. You got something else? What you got?
Last thing. March, we're in November, a day away from December. People, you know, we've canceled games. There's no doubt about it. We played a whole lot of games.
Yeah.
Over the past weekend. And you know who's who's happiest?
Players. Yeah.
Players look so – you saw them. By the way, what one of those things you guys were eating at that restaurant across the street?
Oh, Walleye Bites.
Yeah. What is that?
Unbelievably good. Like when in South Dakota, you know, I'm not getting pizza. So, you know, they had Walleye Bites. The Blue Rock had Walleye Bites and really, really cold Bud Light, Seth. I mean, it was, you know, game's over. I got to give me some Walleye Bites. I like South Dakota, Seth. I saw
you're on Mount Rushmore now. Congratulations.
My own route, Mount Rushmore. Hey, but no, the player. Hey, Seth, let's go back to that real quick. I got to sit there and watch pure joy out of players. Like, no crowd. So, to start a game, the team, their bench is like cheering. Defense. You know, I mean, I just saw, how do I put it?
Pure motion.
Like, guys were freed up, you know, to do what they love. So, everybody out there, whine and moan. Complain all you want, but the players are enjoying this more than anybody. Sit back, relax, and watch.
I'm with you. And I'm excited. We've got a great week this week. We got champions this week. We got the Jimmy V this week. We got
Maui,
which moved to Asheville this week. And we've got good basketball this week. And the other thing is, now that the students are off campus, those environments on campus are going to get that much safer, and we're going to get through this. And a vaccine's underway.
It's all good.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.